Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. The more experience I gain with RPGs, the more I appreciate elegance in RPG systems. Not only do elegant mechanics make a game easy to learn, teach, and grok, but it also helps everyone at the table keep their focus where it belongs, character and story. Today, I look at a few systems, some more elegant than others, and try to tease out what works and why. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters, truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 40 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, coming at you from the Obsidian Monolith, somewhere outside time and space. I've got a great show for you today. I'm going to discuss elegance in RPGs. I'm really excited to talk about this. This is something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. But before I get into that, I just want to know that this is an historic occasion here at Starwalker Studios. This is the last podcast episode I am recording in my studio in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We are in the process of packing for a move to Seattle right now. So this is the last thing I'm recording, the last episode I'm putting together before I pack up the studio itself and we go on the road. So this is a 2,000 plus mile move. It's a big move. It's super stressful, of course, and I have been podcasting like a madman for the past few weeks, trying to get lots of content in the can so that while I'm moving and I'm looking for a new home in Seattle, you're still getting episodes and I don't have to worry about that. And I can focus on finding a new place to live, and however long it takes, we should be good. And in fact, I think that I will probably end up having quite a bit more than I need. But hey, better to be overprepared than underprepared, right? The reason I'm recording this episode today, the reason this topic has come up for me, is I've been reading quite a few game systems in the last few weeks. Some are, you know, systems I've played or run before or have read before. Some are new systems. And as I was reading through quite a few systems in a short period of time, it really started to jump out at me how some are really more elegant than others. And I think a better way to say it than to say that some systems are more elegant than others, although that is true, an even better way to say it is that some mechanics are more elegant than others. So I've been comparing and contrasting games like D&D 3X, 3.0, 3.5, Pathfinder, D&D 5th Edition, 13th Age, which are all kind of different flavors of the same thing, Star Wars, and Numenera, the Cypher system. So what do I mean when I say elegance, right? We should define that first, and at least how I'm using it today. So ideally, what I'm looking for when I'm looking at an RPG system is I want one that is easy to learn, easy to teach, and easy to grok. If I have a new player at my table, a player who's never played this game before, or even a player who's never played an RPG before, I want a game that I can teach them easily, that they can learn easily, that they can pick up. I don't want them to have to play multiple sessions before they kind of start to get it, right? And I want that experience to be enjoyable for them. I'm sure I've probably mentioned this on the show before, but my wife, Nikki, is not a fan of tabletop RPGs. She's done it. She's tried it. She gave it the college try. It's just not her thing. But the first time I got her to try one, I was in my Pathfinder phase. So I was running Pathfinder. I was playing Pathfinder. And so I got her to try it out. And, you know, we made a Pathfinder character. And already, just in the character creation process, I could see that I was losing her. It was too complicated. It took too long. And you know, for those of us that are veteran RPG players, a lot of times we really enjoy making characters, right? Like, we love making characters. And one of the first things that we'll look at when we look at a new game is the character creation process. But a lot of times for a brand new player who's never played an RPG before, that isn't great for them, right? They don't even know what the game is yet. They haven't had that experience. They don't know what to expect. And instead of starting out playing the game, they start out making a character, which seems very abstract. And can you even make a decent character when you've never played the game before, right? I know when I play MMOs, or I used to play a lot of MMOs, you know, it was very normal for me when I was playing a new MMO to make a character, play to like 10th, 20th level or whatever, get to the point where I'm like, okay, I get this game now, I understand how everything works, and then go make a new character. Because either at this point I've decided that the character I made I don't want to play because I want to play a different class now that I understand how the classes really work. Or maybe I want to play the same character, but I just realize now that some of the decisions I made in the very beginning when I made this character and I didn't know what I was doing weren't very good decisions, or weren't the decisions I would make now. And I find it's very similar with RPGs. Now, luckily for me, I usually run games, and I don't know that I've ever played, other than like way back in my high school days when I first started role playing, I don't know that since then I've ever played a game that I hadn't run before. So, you know, I already usually know the game pretty well before I make my first character. So I don't have that, but I think I would if I went and played, like, for instance, 13th Age. I've read the book, but I haven't played it. I haven't run it. I'm sure that if I jumped into a 13th Age campaign and I made a character, that after a few weeks, I'd be like, yeah, I want to play something different. Because now that I really get how this game works, I don't want to play this anymore, or I want to make some changes. Now, something cool that D&D does in the Adventurers League, and Pathfinder does this in Pathfinder Society too, is they give you a little window where you can change things about your character. In fact, you can totally rebuild your character. In Pathfinder, I think you have until your first session at second level to make those changes. In D&D, you have until fourth level to make those changes. And I actually did that with my Tyranny of Dragons campaign, just because 5th edition had just come out. Most of my players hadn't played it either at all or very much. And so I told them, I said, look, for the first four levels, you know, if you want to make a change to your character, I'm okay with that, whether it's tweaking some ability scores or completely changing your class or whatever. Like, I'm cool with that. Now, I wouldn't do that again. Like, I don't like what it does to the game. I mean, it just kicks suspension of disbelief out the window. You know, it's like, oh, you know, my character was an elf and now he's a fire genasi, you know? I mean, yeah, the DM can jump through some hoops and make that make sense somehow, but it's still going to be pretty contrived. And especially if you have multiple players in the group doing that, like, you know, it's just not going to make a lot of sense. And you're just going to have to kind of hand wave that and be like, okay, well, whatever, that happened. And I don't like that. I like, you know, if I'm running a campaign, I like cohesion, and I like, you know, the characters to be consistent and grow from point A to point B, not jump from point A to point G with nothing in between. But for new players, that's a great thing that you can do. But I want a system that is easy to teach and easy to understand. It's so much better if that new player can just get it, right? And a great thing that we see nowadays that I really like is with beginner games, if you're Star Wars or starter game or starter box, whatever D&D calls it, is that they come with pre-generated characters. And I think that's a pretty smart way to do it, to be able to just jump into the game and have a character and be able to get a few sessions under your belt before you even have to deal with the character creation process. I think is the best way to do it with a completely new player, whether they're new to RPGs in general or to the game. You know, let them play a pre-gen, get a feel for that, and then let them make a new character. And I think what I would do if I was running a campaign and not just a one-shot or something, I think the best thing to do if you have a whole table of new players is just run something short, like a one-shot. Let them play pre-gens, let them get a grasp of the system, and then have them make their own characters and start your campaign. But if I have maybe a table of seasoned players and then I've got one new person that's never played before, you know, maybe ask them, what kind of character do you want to play? I make them that character, let them play that character for a few sessions, and then at that point, they can either make a new character or make some changes to that character, and I'm not going to give them an XP penalty or anything for that. So I think that's how I would do it now, because I've seen, especially with the Star Wars beginner games, how well those pre-gens work to introduce new players, and that's a really genius way to handle it. Now, you have games that are simpler, like a game like a Cypher System game, and you know, you might argue, well, you know, with those games, a new player can make their character and they're going to be okay. And I think that's more true than a more complex game, but it's still not really true, because if they have no experience with that system, you know, they still have to make choices. They have to pick their abilities and stuff, and they may later learn that they really don't like the choices that they made. And yeah, you can occasionally swap stuff out, but ultimately you're going to have the same thing where a brand new player is going to get to a point where they're like, you know, if I would have known what I know now when I made this character, I would have done things differently. So that's just kind of the nature of the beast. But I think the more elegant your system is, the less of those problems you're going to have, and the less play time it's going to take the player to get to that point where they're comfortable with the system and they know what they're doing and they're ready to make a character that they can play for the long haul. So not just from the player perspective or teaching the game to a new player, as a GM, I also appreciate an elegant game so that I can really grasp the system inside and out, and I can make rulings on the fly during play and have those hold up within the mechanics of the system. Yes, in any game, I can make a ruling on the fly, but the less elegant the system is, the more likely I'm going to have problems with that ruling. And when I go back later and check on it, it turns out, well, there's actually a rule that contradicts that. Or maybe this isn't totally balanced in a way I didn't think of at the time. Where with a truly elegant system, you can make those rulings on the fly. And later, if you look it up, you find out either, well, there's not a rule that covers that, but the way I did it totally works within the system. Or there is a rule that covers that, and what I came up with actually is exactly what the rule is. And this happened a lot of times for me running Numenera, where things would come up during play and I would just kind of deal with it on the fly. And later I would look it up and find out, oh, there is a system for this and it works exactly the way I came up with, which is a good sign of elegance in the system. So I want a game where I can make these rulings on the fly, and I don't want to have to constantly during play refer to books or GM screens, cards, tables, crap like that. Like once in a while is okay, you know, but if I have to do that all the time, then I'm not a fan. Like for instance, the new Star Wars games, you know, they're like, you have like your critical table, right? And you may get to a point where you have that memorized, but for most of us, we're probably going to have to look at that when that happens. But, you know, that's one table. You can have that there on your screen and you roll on it once in a while. No big deal, right? But if every other thing that someone does, you have to look shit up, that's not fun for anybody. So I want all that, but at the same time, I want a system that's got something to it, that has some meat to it, something we can dig our teeth into. I don't want a system that just hinges on one mechanic. And I want that so that there's something for us to work with, so we don't get bored with it. What I'm looking for is kind of this perfect balance between a system that's too crunchy and a system that just doesn't have enough to it. Now, big caveat here, but before I get into this even further, is that, you know, this balance, whatever this perfect balance is likely going to be different for everyone, right? I think we're most of us are going to fit within a certain range, but individually, we're all going to be slightly different as far as where that sweet spot is for me or for you. So a game that hits the mark for me might be too complicated for you, or it might be too simple for you. So obviously this is all my opinion, but hopefully through this discussion, we can tease out some things to look for in games and systems to help you better evaluate those systems and find the ones that work best for you. So again, I'm just going to use a few systems here for comparison. You can definitely get bogged down with examples, and I think I have kind of a good spectrum here of more and less elegant systems and mechanics to kind of compare to make points. So you can, of course, apply this discussion to any other games and make your own analysis of these games. So games like D&D 3X and Pathfinder can be a lot of fun because you can build really complex characters and you can make you know, very individualized characters, and you could have in Pathfinder, you could easily have a party where everybody's the same class, but all the characters are very different. And the kind of simulation aspect to the game, what I call it anyway, where we have all these rules for all these different things, that aspect is rewarding to those players who learn the system well. And, you know, this is something about the fact that we're playing a role-playing game, right? Some of these more simple systems, I feel like we're losing the game part of it. Right. Like there are some very storytelling focused systems out there where it's almost not even really a game anymore, in that there are rules and mechanics that can be manipulated and even exploited. And, you know, we're gamers, a lot of us, or most of us. And, you know, there's a certain satisfaction of knowing a system well and being able to work within that system to get things done that you want to get. Like, for instance, Pathfinder, you know, you take someone who knows nothing about Pathfinder, throw the book at them and say, make a character, and they're going to make a very different character as far as what that character can do as someone who knows Pathfinder in and out and has a lot of experience with it. And there's a certain degree of satisfaction there of saying, hey, I know this game really well now, and I can make this awesome character that not only can do exactly what I want the character can do, but can be really good at it. So all of these things, you know, there's pros and cons, and you kind of have to weigh, like, where do you fall on this? So one thing that I have found comparing these systems is anytime in a system you start having a lot of bonuses to a role that you have to add together, you're losing elegance at that point. So, for example, let's take an attack roll in like a D20 type game. So, for instance, you could say, okay, you roll a 20-sided die. You're going to add a modifier from your ability, from your attribute, like strength, to hit bonus. Any bonuses you have from feats or magic items, any situational bonuses the GM adds. And you do all the math. You add all these numbers together, add that to the thing you rolled, and then compare that to your DC or your target number. So this is slow, and it really compounds to slow play when you have a lot of rolls going on, like in combat. And it also delays the impact of that roll because you don't know instantly when you make the roll if you succeed or not. You know, if you're rolling a 20-sided die and you're adding six different bonuses to it, there's a delay between when the die stops rolling and when you know whether you succeeded or not. Even if you totaled the bonuses ahead of time and you're like, okay, I have a plus 12, there's still a little delay because you have to do that operation of, okay, I rolled a 3 plus 12 is 15 compared to the number. Okay. Now, Numenera tried to address this by inverting the operation. So Numenera actually pretty much works the same way, only instead of making a roll and adding bonuses to it, you're instead basically subtracting your bonuses from the DC before you make the roll. So it's the same thing. You're still having to do these fiddly little math equations, but at least this way, when you go to roll that die, you know exactly what you need. Now, you might say, well, Lex, actually, you can do that with a D20 game like Pathfinder or D&D the same way. Is you say, okay, I need a 15, I have a plus 12, so I need a 3 or higher. So that's why I'm saying they're really the same. So this does address the immediacy issue somewhat, because in Numenera, you know what number you need on that die, and you're going to know instantly if you succeed or not. However, it's not really speeding up play at all, because you're still doing the same operations. You're just doing it before the roll instead of after the roll. So it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other, right? Also, I would argue that the cipher system is not really any more elegant than your regular D20 system. In fact, it has its own awkwardness in the relationship of your target number, which is the difficulty times 3. So in Numenera, all your tasks have a difficulty of 1 and 10, 1 through 10, which, unlike in D&D or Pathfinder, that isn't your DC. You have to take the difficulty and times it by 3 to get your DC. And depending who you are, when I say that, you might say, well, that doesn't sound like a big deal. Or you might say, wow, that sounds really obnoxious. But even if you're someone that says, well, that's not a big deal, run this game for a lot of different players, and you'll find out that, yeah, it is really obnoxious. probably, if you're someone that says that's not a big deal, you're probably someone who's really comfortable with math, and maybe you even like math, or at the very least, you don't hate it. And so you're like, yeah, whatever. I know my 3 multiplication table pretty well. I'm okay with that. But that's not everybody. And in fact, that's not even the majority. I think most people out there either aren't terribly good at math, don't like math, or don't think they're terribly good at math. And so all of those people are going to be really annoyed by constantly having to multiply and divide things by 3. And it's not even an easy number like 2 or 5. It would be fairly easy for most people to do, but it's 3. Then with the cipher system, you add in effort and edge mechanics, and it's not intuitive at all. And believe me, I know. I have taught this system to so many different people. I have definitely taught Numenera and or The Strange to more people than I have any other game, or probably even all the other games together. And that's because I ran games online for new players. I ran quite a few games at Gen Con for new players. And pretty much every time I've run Numenera, I've had new players that have never played the system before. I even ran it for another podcast, the RPG Academy. I ran it for all those guys and had to teach them the system. And, you know, I've seen the gamut of players, from people who this is the first game they've ever played to people that are veterans and been playing RPGs for years and years and years. And all of them found this relationship between, you know, your target number being 3 times the difficulty and having effort and having edge really hard to wrap your head around. Now, once you do wrap your head around it, it seems fairly simple, except for the multiplying, dividing by 3 thing. But getting to that point is a learning curve, and some people really have a hard time with it. So much so that one gentleman even created new D20s that just show you the difficulty that you hit. I mean, that right there tells you that there's a lack of elegance here. If someone can make a product of a special die to interpret your system and it sells. All right, so another example. I finally got a chance to read the 13th Age core book not too long, like a couple weeks ago. I've heard a lot about 13th Age. I've talked about 13th Age with people. I've read articles about it. I've read parts of the SRD online, but I finally got a chance to actually sit down with the book and read the whole thing. And as far as 13th Age goes, I really love some of the innovations in it as far as how you run the game. And I would say if you're a GM of any game, or especially like a D20 flavored game, but really any game, get a hold of the 13th Age book and read through advice on how to run the game and how to GM and stuff like that. And even better, get a hold of some 13th Age adventures and read what they have there. I wouldn't recommend buying the book because it's a huge book and it's pretty expensive just for that. Don't buy it unless you're going to play it. But if you can get a hold of a copy and kind of peruse it, then I highly recommend it. And I think that there's, you know, lots of great stuff there that you can apply to any game, which is very germane to this podcast, because that's the kind of things I'm looking for the show is kind of nuggets that you can take from any game and apply it to any other game. And 13th Age has awesome stuff. And I had Will on the show for a few episodes, and he talked about some of those things, like how they handle what we call chump encounters and things like that. So that stuff in 13th Age is awesome and brilliant. And 13th Age kind of takes 3.5 type game and streamlines it a little bit, maybe. I'm actually not convinced that it streamlines it. It seems at first blush that it does, but I'm not convinced that it really does, because it's still fairly awkward in the same way that D&D 3.x or Pathfinder is. So I talked about like your D20 roll, where you have D20, ability modifier, hit modifier, bonuses from feats, magic items, situational modifiers, etc., etc., etc. So in 13th Age, if I understand it correctly, your attack roll works similarly. You have a D20, you add your level as a modifier, you add your ability bonus, item bonuses, situational modifiers, etc. So this is actually the same number of operations as in 3x. It's exactly the same, which is why I'm saying I don't know that it really streamlines anything, because instead of a two hit modifier, you're adding your level. So I guess in a way that's streamlined a little bit because everybody's is going to be the same. But I mean, usually in Pathfinder or D&D 3x, like, you know what your hit bonus is, right? I mean, it's not like you have to look that up every time. Now, damage in 13th Age is the opposite of streamlined compared to Pathfinder or D&D. I'm not sure what that word would be, because that is the die roll plus an ability modifier, which is the same. However, there is a tier multiplier to your ability modifier. So depending on what level you are, you're going to multiply your ability modifier to your damage by a certain number. Also, if you're rolling damage for a weapon, you roll a number of dice equal to your level. So if you're using a sword, which say it's a D8 and you're fifth level, whatever, you're going to roll 5D8 instead of 1D8. So now, in addition to adding all these bonuses, just like you would in 3X or Pathfinder, you also have to add multiple dice together. So, you know, that's cool as far as like weapon damage scales with your level, which is a cool idea. But as far as our elegance discussion and, you know, how long does it take between the minute you roll your die, or better yet, how long does it take between the minute the DM says, make this roll, to the minute that you know whether you succeeded or failed, you know, which includes figuring out what dice you need to roll, rolling them, figuring out what your total is and applying it to your target. Like, how long does that take? And from that point of view, you know, I don't see this as an improvement. I see it as the opposite, because it's going to take longer. Your damage rolls are going to take longer than they would in Pathfinder or D&D. And something that's interesting that I found in the 13th Age book is that the writers actually realize that this is kind of awkward and is going to eat up a lot of time, especially when you're doing a lot of rolls, because they have a whole section in the book where they recommend these various dice rolling conventions to speed things up, which involve things like not rolling at all and using averages, or only rolling some of the dice and then applying a multiplier. Like, you know, if you're going to roll 6 dice, instead roll like 2 and multiply it by 3 or something like that. And I'm like, why not just come up with a simpler system? Why come up with a system and then say, hey, we realize this is kind of complicated and awkward, so here's different ways you could do it that aren't so complicated and awkward. Why not just come up with a less complicated and awkward thing to begin with? But again, this is assuming that elegance in the game is something you care about, and some people don't, which, you know, there's different games for different people, right? So I'm not saying that 13th Age isn't a good game. Again, there are a lot of innovations as far as being a GM and how you run your game and how you present it to your players and cooperative gaming and stuff like that, that I think is really awesome. But for me personally, I saw this and I'm like, I don't want to play this. This is in some ways more complicated than 3X or Pathfinder, which I quit playing because they were too complicated. In this kind of stuff, I feel like 5th edition D&D, continuing comparisons here, has made some real improvements here. First of all, we've gotten rid of an attack bonus, which changes with every level, or a bonus equal to your level. And instead, we have a proficiency bonus. And this is nice for a couple reasons. First thing, the proficiency bonus is the same for all PCs within a given level range. It doesn't matter what class you are, and you can even be a few levels apart. Everybody's proficiency bonus is the same, which makes it really a lot easier than everybody's being different. And that bonus also caps out at plus 6, not plus 20 or plus 10. So it's less to add, right? It's less, you know, it starts at 2 and it ends at 6. So there's less changes in that equation than starting at 1 and ending at 20, or starting at 1 and ending at 10. And also, it doesn't change every level. So that bonus is only going to change a few times during the career of your character. Every time you level up, you don't have to change that bonus. And I found in play that the proficiency bonus really streamlines gameplay, because it is the same number for everybody. And it's the same number used for lots of different things. So you use that same bonus for anything from your attack roll to a proficiency bonus on a skill check to the bonus you get to a saving throw because it's a class saving throw for you. All those bonuses are the same number, and they all change at the same time, and they're the same for everybody. So, for example, I've run 5th edition enough now that I know that your average first level character is going to have a plus 5 on their attack roll. And it doesn't matter what class they are. It doesn't matter if their preferred attack is a longbow or a longsword or a firebolt. It's going to be plus 5. It doesn't matter. And the reason is they're getting plus 3 from their stat of 16 or 17. So if you use the stat array or the point by method, your highest stat is going to be 16 or 17, which is the plus 3 bonus. And everybody usually has that. And then they're going to get plus 2 from their proficiency bonus. So it's plus 5 for everybody, any group, any character. It's most likely going to be plus 5. And it may not be, because someone may kind of even out their stats and not have that plus 3 for their prime stat. But so far, for every player I've run for, every character I've run for, it's been plus 5 for their preferred attack. In the same way, I know that the spell save DC for a first level character is most likely going to be 13. Again, it doesn't matter what class they are. It doesn't matter what spell it is. It doesn't matter what level the spell is. If they're third level and they can have second level spells, it's still going to be 13. And that's because your spell save DC is 8 plus your stat bonus, which again is going to be plus 3, and the plus 2 proficiency modifier. So it's really sweet. If you're a wizard and you're casting a spell, your first level, I'm like, well, your DC is probably 13. I don't need to even ask you. I just need to remember, is your save normal or not? That's all I got. If it's normal, then I know what it is. If you're a druid and you cast a spell, it's 13. If you're a cleric, it's 13. If you're a bard, it's 13. It doesn't matter. And again, everybody's is going to change together. So when everybody's proficiency mod goes up, then those numbers are going to go up. Now, as you go further in level, people get less and less the same, because, you know, at fourth level, someone, you know, player A may bump their primary stat and player B may take a feat. So, you know, at first level, it's nice because it's all the same. But as you go on, it becomes less so. But they're still going to be close. Also, in 5th edition, another huge improvement here is there are no more situational modifiers to even further complicate things. So in a game like 13th Age or Pathfinder or D&D 3X, you know, in addition to all these other bonuses that you have to add together to make a roll, there's also situational modifiers. Maybe you get a plus 2 flanking bonus, or you get a minus whatever bonus because the person's in fog, or you get a bonus because you're on higher ground, or you get a bonus because it's Saturday. I don't know. You know, it can get crazy, all the bonuses, if you really get into it. And it tends to get crazy in those games. I know this is true with 3X and Pathfinder anyway, because players want to succeed. So they're looking for any bonus they can get. And it becomes this thing of, how many bonuses can I stack? You know, am I on higher ground? Am I flanking? Is it Saturday? Am I taller than this person? You know, players will just search for any bonus they can get. And as a GM, it's kind of our job to give that to them if it makes sense, right? And so you end up with a lot of bonuses. So in 5th edition, instead of all these bonuses, we just have advantage and disadvantage, which doesn't slow play at all. And it's actually kind of fun, because you get to roll 2 dice and take the better or worse number, which I found for myself, and it seems for all my players, that's a lot more fun than rolling a die and adding a bunch of little numbers to it. It's a lot more fun to roll 2 and say, oh, look at that, I rolled a 2 and I rolled a 20. I get to take the 20. That's pretty sweet. Another thing that's really nice for the GM in 5th edition is, you know, if you run it the way it's recommended, and not everybody does this, but I recommend it, they recommend it, your DCs are always going to be 5, 10, 15, or sometimes in high level play, maybe 20. And usually with the DC 5, you don't even call for a roll. You usually only ask for a roll if it's DC 10, 15, or 20, because DC 5, it, you know, unless they totally suck at that thing, they're probably going to succeed anyway. And if they fail, it's going to be kind of dumb that they failed at whatever that DC 5 task is. So, you know, starting out running 5th edition, you only need to know 3 numbers, 5, 10, 15. If it's super easy and they don't need to roll, it's a 5. If it's not super hard, but it's hard enough that there's a real chance of failure and you want them to roll, it's a 10. If it's, you know, kind of hard and there's a good chance they won't succeed, or, you know, you need some good bonuses to succeed or some good skill in that, it's a 15. And that's all you need to do. That's all you need to worry about. A lot easier than even Numenera, where you've got 10 difficulties. Even at 20th level, you've only got 4 difficulties, and one of them you really don't roll for, especially at that level. And some of the alternate systems in DMG, you wouldn't even be rolling for DC 10s once you got that high level. So there is kind of a comparison of some different systems that are very similar, right? We've got D&D, Pathfinder, which are at least mechanically almost exactly the same. We've got 5th edition, 13th age, and even Numenera. I think once you get past the inversion of the operations, is really very similar. They're all very similar mechanically. In some ways, Numenera is easier, but it kind of is negated by the dividing and multiplying by 3 thing, and effort and edge being pretty complicated, especially for new players. I think in a lot of ways, you know, D&D 5e, as far as this kind of D20 system, is where it's at for a nice blend of not having it too complicated so you can keep things moving, but also having some variety in there and some real mechanics you can work with. Now, the Star Wars role-playing games by Fantasy Flight Games are another really interesting method of striving for elegance in your systems. So here, we get rid of numbers altogether, and we're using symbols instead. Now, for me personally, the jury is still out on this, whether this makes it more or less elegant or if it's the same, just different. But I have really high hopes for this system. And the reason I say the jury's out is just I don't have enough experience with it yet to know, you know, how it stacks up with these other games as far as how easy is it to run, how easy is it to teach, how easy is it to play, and how quickly can you resolve things. So one thing that I think makes it really promising is there is no math. There's not even any numbers, which is really great for any of those people who don't like math, aren't good at math, or don't think they're good at math. There's no math. There's not even any numbers to like engage that, ugh, I don't like math trigger. There's merely symbols that you cancel. So you don't even have to do any adding. You literally can line the die up and say, this symbol cancels this one cancels that one. This is what I've got left. Now, the downside here is you are rolling a lot of dice, and with larger dice pools in the game, canceling out all those symbols may be as slow or maybe even slower than adding a bunch of numbers. I'm not sure about that, but it seems like it maybe could be. However, canceling symbols does take a lot less brain power than adding numbers, even small numbers, even lots of ones and twos, and it's less intimidating to people that aren't math nerds. Another nice spin with this system is that the target, instead of being a number you're trying to hit, is instead represented by the quote-unquote negative dice that you roll along with your positive dice. So this is even a bit more immediate and visceral, I think, because it's all concrete right there on the table. Instead of having this abstract number, all the dice are right there, and you can see, do I have more successes and failures? But again, more dice probably does mean more time spent deciphering what that roll means. Now, I suspect that with practice with this system, you can get to the point where even with a large dice pool, you can roll those and pretty much know almost instantly if you succeeded or failed at a glance. And then it only takes a few seconds to work out, you know, how much you succeeded or failed and what kind of advantage threat you have. I suspect that that's true. I suspect because they're symbols and the human brain loves symbols, and because they just certain symbols cancel each other out, that someone who's really good with the system and has a lot of practice with it can roll a big dice pool and just glance at it and say, I succeeded or I failed. I don't know if that's true or not. If you're someone that has a huge amount of experience with this system, I would love to hear from you, gamemastersjourney@gmail.com, and let me know. You know, does it get pretty quick? Can you get to the point where you can roll a big dice pool and kind of just glance and have a good idea of how well or bad you did right away? Now, another system that is very elegant and simple is Fate. And again, Fate is one kind of like 13th Age where I don't have a lot of practical experience with it, but I have read it and studied it. So with Fate, you're having rolls that are going to be in a very tight range of -4 to +4. And again, it's symbols, not numbers, pluses and minuses. So you can kind of almost avoid numbers altogether in Fate. And then you're usually going to have like one small bonus to your roll, at least if you're playing like a more simple Fate game. And, you know, that bonus isn't going to be very big. It might be two or something, right? So it's pretty easy peasy. And the target is easy to remember. I believe, that as long as you have a plus one or higher, you succeed. And then there's degrees of success. I'm not sure about that. It's been a little while since I looked at Fate, but that's pretty easy. However, my fear with Fate is that it may go a little too far on the simple side. And maybe like what I found with the Cypher system, it may lack nuance and crunch that many of us crave, especially when you're kind of getting long in a tooth with a game or a campaign. And that's something I think I've talked about on the show before. I ran a lot of Numenera, and after a while, it just like every roll kind of is the same. And there's just not a lot there mechanically to work with. It's pretty much you have a little resource management and that's it. For me running I like to say Numenera is a game I love to run. Not so sure that I'd really want to play it very much. It's great to run because it's so easy. And it's kind of almost a no-brainer to run. And, you know, it's great for lazy GMs. but as a player, it's just, I get kind of bored with it. There's just not much there to work with. Mind Jammer was a system that seemed to try to compensate for kind of the simplicity in Fate. And I know there's a lot of different Fate games out there. Like there's Dresden Files I hear a lot about, and I haven't looked at that. And so, you know, my experience is basically with Fate Core. That's, you know, I've read that cover to cover a few times. So, you know I got the Mindjammer book and that added a lot of complexity to that system. However, for me, that game seemed ridiculously awkward. In fact, it's probably one of the most awkward systems that I've ever read. The problem was you took this really simple basic system and then you just kept iterating on it over and over and over again to make it really complicated. But it ended up awkward. I think you'd be better off with, you know, a system like maybe 5th edition or maybe Star Wars. It's a little bit more robust to begin with, and then it's easier to add complexity onto that more developed framework than something so simple. Another system I've looked into recently that looks interesting is the Age system, which Will Wheaton is using for his Titan's Grave game. And this definitely seems faster than 3.x and probably even 13th age. And with this system, instead of rolling a d20, you're rolling 3d6 and then you're adding a bonus to that. And it doesn't seem like there's a ton of bonuses, although they do have some situational bonuses, it seems like. And then special things happen when you roll doubles and stuff like that. It seems a little quicker, but on the other hand, you're adding three dice instead of just rolling a d20. You're having to add three six-sideds together, and then you're adding modifiers. Although, at least with Titan's Grave, it seems like usually there's just one modifier, which comes from their attribute or their ability. And another issue I have with this system is the DCs seem much more granular, which is more for the GM to deal with, as opposed to D&D's. You know, your DC is either going to be 5, 10, or 15. At least with Titan's Grave, I'm seeing like difficulty 16, difficulty 18, difficulty 13. So, you know, you as a DM have to kind of grasp what's the difference between a 13 and a 14 difficulty, right? The difference between a 5, 10, and 15 difficulty is really easy to grasp. It's super simple. And even Numenera's, you know, 1 to 10 difficulty is fairly easy to grasp. But, you know, having this very granular difficulty like in the Age system, I think is false precision, as they say. So there's definitely a sweet spot here, and I think it's hard to hit. And I don't know that you're ever going to, well, I know you're never going to have a game that's going to make everybody happy, right? Because everybody's got a different sweet spot. But I even wonder if it's even possible to hit that sweet spot all in one game. Because, you know, it's like a lot of these games have certain aspects that are really elegant to them. Like Fate, the basic mechanic is really elegant. Numenera, the idea of having a difficulty of 1 to 10 is really elegant. The execution of that is not elegant. D&D, having just three difficulties, is really elegant. But then, you know, some of these systems also have things that aren't elegant. So it's hard to find one that's got it all just nailed. I think it's rough finding that perfect balance of a system that's both fast and intuitive and elegant, and yet has enough to it that all the roles don't seem the same. Second, not everybody agrees. So like I kind of said before, for me personally, I feel like right now, 5th edition of all the games I've played is the sweet spot. It's where it's at for me. Games like 3.X, Pathfinder, and 13th Age, for me, fall too far on the awkward, slow, crunchy side of the spectrum. Fate and Cypher System fall too far on the oversimplified and not enough to it side. And then Cypher has the whole awkwardness of the multiples of three. And I'm still on the fence about Star Wars. I have high hopes for it, and maybe I'll revisit this topic about Star Wars specifically once I have more experience with it. I really have high hopes because of the whole symbol thing. I know that symbols are basically hardwired into our brains, where numbers are something you have to learn. So maybe, you get really well versed with that. It may be super fast. I'm looking forward to finding out. Now, there's a couple other systems that I've played in the past that I'll mention real quickly. You have the D6 system, like West End Games Star Wars, which I know has had kind of a revival of people that love that system. That's one of the most awkward systems out there as far as elegance, because not only are you rolling a fistful of dice, but you have to add all those dice together. So you're adding however many D6s you roll together to see what your total is and whether that hits the target number. You're not going to know right when you roll if you succeeded or failed. You might get a good idea if you see lots of sixes, maybe, or lots of ones. You might get a feeling of, oh, this didn't go well. But you have to do all that math. So that's far more awkward, I think, than any of the various D20 iterations. Another system that's similar, and I think an improvement on that, is like the old World of Darkness system. And I think the new one works very similarly, where, again, you're rolling a fistful of dice that are all the same dice. But now, instead of adding those all together and looking for a total, you're looking for a specific value on each die. So maybe your difficulty is 8. So every die that you see that's an 8 or higher is a success, and every one that isn't is not a success. So that's definitely an improvement on the D6 version. It's faster, it's more elegant, but it's still, I don't think it's as elegant as 5th edition, because, you got to look through all those dice for your successes. So it's kind of, I think I see a lot of similarity between that and the Star Wars system. Only one is using numbers and one is using symbols. And obviously the Star Wars system has more than just pass-fail to it, because there's different types of symbols. So there's those two. And, another thing about this, since we're kind of talking about dice a lot here, is personally I prefer games where I get to roll more than one die during the game session, and where I get to roll more than one type of die during the game session. I like most of you probably have quite a collection of polyhedral dice, and it's like a drag in Cypher System when I only get to use one of them. I get to use one D20, and that's all I ever get to use, maybe a D6. So I much prefer a game that can actually use as many of those dice as possible. Again, like the White Wolf system or the D6 system, you get to roll a lot of dice, but they're all the same. So, that's really got nothing to do with elegance. That's just a personal preference. But again, everything's a spectrum, right? Because there's games out there that have like D30s and shit. And that's just like, no, that's just going too far. So what are your thoughts? Do you prefer more streamlined and more elegant systems? Or do you prefer crunchier but slower systems? What system hits the sweet spot for you? Let me know. Email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. And let me know what your favorite system is and why is that your sweet spot. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 40 of Game Master's Journey. If you'd like to reach me, shoot me an email at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. Follow me on Google+, search for Lex Starwalker, and follow me on Twitter @LexStarwalker. visit the website, starwalkerstudios.com, and there you can find the show notes for this show. One thing I want to mention real quick, I've started a new URL convention for all my shows. So as you probably know already, all of my shows are just starwalkerstudios.com/the show name. So the exact page for this show is starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney. And from here on out, all of the episodes will just be slash episode number. So for instance, if you want to go directly to this episode, if you are one to type in URLs, you can go to starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney/4040, and it'll take you right there. And that will be the show notes for this episode. And there will be any links to anything I talked about in the show. And there's also lots of really great, easy ways that you can help support Game Master's Journey and support Star Walker Studios. At the top of the show notes, you will find our Patreon button, and you can click on that and go check out the Patreon page for Game Master's Journey. And I really appreciate all my patrons, and please consider becoming a patron. Please become a patron. Don't just consider it, do it. There's also a donate button at the top of the show notes if you prefer to just make a one-time donation. And also, you will find iTunes and Stitcher buttons at the top of the show notes. And if you click one of those, it will take you directly to the show on iTunes or Stitcher. And I'd really appreciate it if you'd leave me a review. If you do leave a 5-star review, I will thank you personally on the show. And then at the bottom of the show notes, you will find a link to my Google Plus community page. Definitely check that out. Join us there. You will find links to my YouTube channel and my Twitch channel. And I stream RPGs on Twitch pretty much every week, and they all also end up on YouTube. So currently on YouTube, you can find a couple different D&D campaigns. You can find a couple different Numenera campaigns and some one-shots. And lots of actual play goodness on YouTube and Twitch. So again, you find those buttons at the bottom of the show notes. You'll also find a link to a free 30-day trial of Audible books, courtesy of Game Master's Journey. And you will find my Amazon referral link at the bottom of the show notes. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week, whatever it is. I will be back next week with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on, elegantly.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.